Welcome to Mind the Gap by Fresh Chat, a podcast where experts and hustlers share their stories on growth, marketing, and customer experience. I'm Abhishek, and I'm your host for the day. Sean, the founder and CEO of Growth Hackers, is a leading authority on growth hacking. He coined the term growth hacking to describe the sustainable growth approach by hyper-growth companies like Facebook, Airbnb, and Amazon. He has led growth at Dropbox, LogMeIn, and Lookout, and Eventbrite. He's also coached and done workshops for a few of the world's fastest growing companies. Sean and his team at Growth Hackers have built the largest community of growth professionals in the world. In our conversation with him today, we are going to decode the famous concept of growth pyramid and deep dive into several aspects of building and scaling company focused on growth. To start with, Sean, growth hacking was coined in 2010, and there's been a lot of strategies everybody are talking about in growth hacking. You know, the common ones people hear is about how Airbnb had a growth hack, how Uber had a growth hack, how every other company that we can think of, Dropbox, had a growth hack and everything. Now, the term by itself has been, has taken a lot of spin that, you know, everybody calls even sending out an email a growth hack today. In terms of these growth strategies, I'm not sure a lot of people have changed now in compared to 2010. Can you tell me, how do you approach growth hack in or growth marketing in 2019?
Yeah, and to me, I think the biggest difference between 2010 and 2019 is just we've done a lot to try to educate people that it's not a single magic bullet that you're trying to figure out or single silver bullet. It's really a consistent process of experimentation using insights from studying what your users are doing, using surveys to understand why they're doing those things, and then having a consistent experimentation process to try to drive continuous improvement in growth of customers and revenue. And then probably one of the biggest differences for me personally is this concept of a North Star metric. And I don't think I appreciated having a single metric that you're particularly focused on moving back in 2010, where I definitely appreciate that much more now.
Great. Okay. Now, can you also tell me, how different is growth for an early stage startup today opposed to an early stage product within a company? So you've been part of LogMeIn before, and you're pretty much in a very similar space like LogMeIn. So how do you look at a North Star metric for a product inside a company and a company by itself?
Yeah, I think that the nuances there really kind of depends on the company itself. So if you have products that are kind of versions of the same mission, like pretty closely aligned products, then probably a single North Star metric is going to work across those, and they're just kind of almost like different levels of getting a customer to an experience in your final core product. But I don't really ever think of a North Star metric on a company level. It's more product based. So if you have very distinct products, then you're going to want a separate North Star metric for each of those products. But we might even want to take a step back and kind of define what I mean by North Star metric. So to me, the idea of a North Star metric is really trying to quantify how much value you're delivering across a customer base. And as you drive more value across a customer base, you're going to have much more sustainable revenue and customer growth. So if you're, let's say you're growing revenue and customers at a very fast pace, but you're not growing value very much, then there's a good chance that your growth is going to crash on the revenue and customer side. So what you really want to do is have those three lines moving consistently together. And that's where I was saying, if you have very different products that are part of a suite, then the value you're delivering is going to be pretty different. So that's why you would want separate North Star metrics for that.
Right. Okay. So we read your blog about the growth pyramid. And can you talk about growth pyramid by covering what are the milestones to be cleared before creating a customer-wide culture of growth? Also, importantly, how do you sustain this growth?
Sure. So the concept of the growth pyramid was something that I originally came up with probably about 10 years ago. And the idea was that I looked at it as three key stages to growth. So essentially at the foundation, if you don't have product market fit, it's impossible to sustainably grow a business. So product market fit essentially meaning your product has to be a must have for people within a market, and hopefully a pretty good size market, and then you can grow for a long time. But rather than, you know, just when you have product market fit, so now you have something that could grow, I realized that you can't just go straight into scaling growth, but there's a number of things that you need to do before you scale growth that's going to make managing and scaling growth much more possible. So that's a stage that I call transition to growth, and that's where everything from putting the measurement systems in place, some positioning there, just even your business model. So you don't want to grow if you don't have a business model generally. Network effect businesses might put the business model off a bit there, but in general, you don't want to grow without a business model. So there was a number of things in this transition to growth stage that you should do before you finally go into actually that ongoing growth that you end up doing for the rest of the existence of the company. But about a year ago, I updated this pyramid to have really more nuance to it and more granular levels. So it's not that different than what I had thought about before, but it broke up particularly the transition to growth stage into subcomponents. So the product market fit is the foundation that supports sustainable growth long term. So that's still really important. But then the next level is where you really define what your North Star metric is. So this would be level two. And if your North Star metric is really a function of figuring out what your product market fit is and how do I capture that in a metric, and then how do I instrument all of the other metrics that relate to that metric, so I can really understand the process of taking someone from consideration of my product all the way through to experiencing it the first time, and then finally having the habit of coming back on a regular basis. And so once I have all of that instrumentation in place, then the next level up the pyramid is where I can have a growth team executing that process to drive growth and keeping track of the learnings. And what I want to do there is not necessarily have that team try to experiment everywhere where they could possibly experiment to drive growth, but really try to ingrain that habit so that when they take on the challenge of going into some areas like activation and retention and building habits and some of the areas that might go into some teams that are less used to testing, that they themselves have some good evidence of the power of testing, and then they've also developed that habit among themselves. So that's really what level four is starting to go into all areas that can improve growth and kind of looking that full customer journey and making sure that experimentation can take place anywhere within that journey. And then finally, that the top level is the company-wide growth mindset and culture that you talked about. And that's where you start to really share all of the learnings from that testing across the company and really try to have people understand the impact that they can make in bringing more value to customers and ultimately driving more sustainable growth across the business.
I just have a couple of questions here. Sure. Now, when you look at growth as a function, now they work with marketing, they work with product, they work with engineering, they work with customer support, the success, and all teams all together. Now, from your experience, I know it's all designed differently with different teams. So in our company, it sits very differently, probably in a different company. The growth team works very closely with the product team. So according to you, which is the closest function that the growth team must work with?
Right. So I think of growth less about being actually a function and a role in the business and more about a process that different people execute. And so I think that marketers tend to be wired in the kind of growth process wise the most, because you can't be a successful online marketer without being pretty experimental and data driven. And so the challenge is that at that surface level, you can't drive results nearly as well as you can if you think about the full customer journey through activation, retention, and habit building. And so when I think of growth, I'm not thinking of it so much as a function as I am that your objective is to be able to run experiments across that full customer journey, across anywhere in that customer journey. And as long as you're running experiments across that full customer journey and you're being deliberate and methodical about where you're focusing on high leverage opportunities, and you're really using the data and you have hypotheses behind the experiments and you're recording your learning, then how you do that, it's okay to do it differently in different companies. So that might be a growth team that's needed to run that, and that's great. And that growth team might be an independent organization that works with marketing, product, engineering, kind of all the way through. Or it might be something, I've also seen it work really well when it sits inside of the product organization, because product teams tend to have really control of some of the biggest growth levers, but aren't always bought into the need to experiment on a first user journey, for example. They're looking often at long-term product roadmap, and so there's a little rewiring that needs to happen there. So again, I think the most important thing to focus on is, are we running experiments, and are we running them really everywhere across that customer journey? And if you're doing that, then whatever model allows you to do that in your company, then you're doing it right.
Right. And the second question that I have is around the startups, right? Now, the entire way the SaaS companies have been performing in the last about a couple of years has changed dramatically. You know, I remember this some 6-7 years ago, to build an MVP is probably going to take about 12 months with a seed capital of about a few $100,000, and experimentation takes longer than that. Now, from there, the world has changed a lot different today. Now, we have, you know, no-code startups which build the MVPs without code, and usability testing has become much, much prior. So the product market fit analysis is done by companies like, say, Price Intelligently or Conjointly, and companies like that even before a product is being launched. You know, you can show users a test website, make them see the use screens, and then find out how their behavior is much, much in advance. Now, this has changed the paradigm of how SaaS companies work, how MVPs work, and how, you know, the time to hit the road is taken much, much lesser. So how is this affected in terms of testing and scaling a startup today?
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of what you just went through is assumption validation, but that's all important. Like ultimately, if people don't respond to the value proposition, then that's important information to know. But really, for product market fit validation, you need to get someone to the point where they've actually experienced the product, and then they can let you know, do I want to come back and keep using this? Or, you know, on a survey level, you can ask them, how would you feel if you could no longer use it? And if they told you, I'd be very disappointed. Then you get that validation that you've actually created an experience that is really valuable. And I think, to me, that's the piece that is almost harder for a non-startup, because if you're inside a larger organization, you probably have access to resources a little faster than you would if you're a startup. And so if you're a startup, you almost can't help but be patient and be really lean in trying to get that MVP to a level where you get that validation that what I've created is something that people want to come back and keep using. Where in a larger organization, you have that exact same product market fit challenge, but it's really hard to say, hey, we don't quite have it yet. Don't give me significant growth capital to try to grow this thing. Let me just keep working until we can get product market fit on this where we've got validated either retention cohorts or feedback from users who say, I absolutely love it after they experience it. And in both cases, once you get to that point, then how you scale the business and how you transition through the rest of the pyramid that we talked about is going to be pretty similar. Probably you're going to have more challenges even as an internal team in a bigger company on some of the cultural changes, where a startup is a blank slate in terms of culture. So you might be able to build some culture and habits a little bit easier. But I think that the product market fit piece, there's no bigger advantage for an established company or a startup in terms of getting to product market fit. Customers are fickle. It's really hard to know what they're gonna love and what they're not gonna love. But a startup, I think, is just more likely to be wired to be patient through that process. They're also likely to run out of capital, which is another issue that maybe the internal team won't do. But I think there's just a lot more pressure to grow faster for an internal product.
You know, the next question is on, you know, what do you think about growth marketing or growth hacking? Do you think growth hacking is for everyone? Or to rephrase this question, if you were hiring somebody for growth hacking or growth marketing in a company, what are the qualities that you look for? Is he somebody who's going to be a lot more data-driven, experimentation, logic, or is it statistics? Or I don't know, I'm just trying to come up with things that we can look for, but what will you look for? Is it for everyone? And if you were hiring, what would you look for in that person?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, again, like what we talked about with the pyramid side is that, you know, the best companies are going to be companies where everyone takes a role in driving growth. And so kind of everyone takes on some of those, the growth hacker approach and outlook and skill set. But particularly in an early stage startup, having an initial person who's really driven to help figure out the growth formula for the business, what I would look for is just that first thing that I just said, that they're really driven to figure it out. And so that's kind of the X factor that's hard to get off of a resume or even out of an interview. But, you know, some people are just going to have that that persistence and drive that they're going to just keep hammering at it until they figure it out. Of course, if they're data driven, that's really important. If they're not looking at the data, then they're not going to learn about what works and what doesn't work. They also have to be disciplined enough to follow a process, and that's where you get in trouble with some of these people, is that they're creative, they want to try a lot of things, but they're not following a process, they're not really studying the feedback, and maybe they're moving the needle by just doing a bunch of things, but if they can't isolate down to what works and what doesn't work, then scaling that and doubling down on the things that work and cutting out the things that don't work isn't going to happen. And so they may get kind of a little blip in the short term, but ultimately they're not going to be able to sustain growth. So that's where I think you want that discipline. You want that person to be analytical, but probably the hardest piece is just that really persistent drive that says, you know, I'm confident that we've created something valuable, and I'm really driven to figure out how do I connect with the people who need this in the most scalable, efficient way.
Right. Now, when we look at learning growth marketing, there are institutes now that talk about growth marketing. There are leaders now who propagate growth marketing and teach people growth, look at data, look at metrics, everything there. But when it comes to you, Sean, personally, you know, where do you think you look for information when you want to learn about growth?
I don't really look externally so much for the information. I think the best way to learn about growth is by executing growth. And so, you know, to me, the more I can be in the trenches actually trying to move results, the more that I'm going to learn about the things that are important for moving those results. So I don't really read a whole lot externally. I mean, I think if I were going to read anything, it would be more on, you know, better analysis, you know, approaches for better analysis, approaches for better surveying, and then possibly trying to understand ways to do better testing by understanding the tools for testing and, you know, new emerging tools for testing.
Great. Can you share some learnings as a marketer from companies that you've worked for? It can be Dropbox, Lookout, LogMeIn, or Uproad, or even the world's largest community that you build for growth hackers. You know, can you talk about learnings as a marketer from all these companies?
Yeah, I mean, that's my whole career has been learning kind of through every step of the way. So I started doing online marketing in 1996 with Uproar, and I, you know, about 6 months before I joined the company, I invested every dollar I had into it. So I think I was, you know, very driven to figure things out. And so one of the things I figured out pretty quickly at Uproar was that I can learn by testing small. I don't need to test big. And as weird as that like it seems so obvious today, but I really had to fight a battle with most of the media properties from an advertising perspective, because most of them had $10,000 or $20,000 kind of minimum buys on these properties. And if I could figure out if it works or not for a few hundred dollars, it was really hard for me to see why would I spend that much money. And so that was something that ultimately I was able to convince thousands and thousands of different websites to allow me to test small and then scale if it worked. But that was probably one of the most important lessons that I learned at Uproar. For LogMeIn, the other thing with Uproar is just having a lot of data and doing lots of testing. I think one of the big things I learned at LogMeIn was data and testing are much more effective if I understand what's going on. So just having lots of conversations with customers and then also lots of surveys helped me to contextualize the data and helped me to contextualize the behavior that users were doing. And I have to credit one of my board members for that. He would push me all the time. When was the last time you spoke to a customer? When was the last time you ran a survey? And you know, my initial response was kind of a smart ass response where I would say, I don't care what people say, I care what people do. And he said, no, I want you to talk to them. And he just kept pushing that. And then at some point the light bulb went off where I just basically said, gosh, based on knowing this is why people want to do this, or this is why people aren't doing this, I was able to run much better experiments. And so that was probably my biggest takeaway at LogMeIn. Probably the other really important one was looking at that experimentation across the full customer journey. So we did that somewhat at Uproar as well, but I think we just got better at bringing all the other teams on board to help with that testing. Where at Uproar, I was really driving the testing myself from the marketing team. But by the time I got to LogMeIn, we got the product team involved and the engineering team, and just that led to a lot more effective testing. Dropbox was probably all about the importance of culture, and we were super deliberate, set out right in the beginning at Dropbox to try to establish a culture of growth and experimentation, and I think we got there in the matter of just a few months. And so that was something that I actually interviewed the head of worldwide digital marketing last year at the Growth Hackers Conference. And that was one of the first things that she said to me is, what makes Dropbox unique is that everyone inside the company takes ownership of growth. And so I think that's a big part of how they became the fastest SaaS company to reach the $1 billion revenue run rate, was just having the power of everyone aligned in driving growth. Probably one other lesson that was important was Lookout. So Lookout, a mobile security software. I really figured out a shortcut to get to product market fit for Lookout that initially, when I joined the company, I joined for 6 months, and I initially asked customers on the product, how would you feel if you could no longer use this product? And the feedback was that only about 7% of the people said they'd be very disappointed if Lookout no longer existed. And so that was kind of a panic moment for me. But by studying why those users would be disappointed and the benefit they were getting and how they were using the product and which parts of the product they were using, we were able to, through repositioning and changing the onboarding just a bit to deliver them to the right experience, In about 2 or 3 weeks, we got it to where over 40% of the users of the next cohort of users that we surveyed said that they'd be very disappointed without Lookout. So and today all those companies that I listed have exceeded the $1 billion valuation mark. But I think to me, Lookout was the one initially that I thought, they're not going to get there, this isn't going to go anywhere. But once we tapped into why people love the product, we were able to build a really solid growth engine with that business.
Now, the other question that I have is largely a story or a narration, you know? So what is that narrative that you have in your brain or in your head? You know, all of us have a narrative. So right now, the narrative that I have in my mind is taking Freshworks to IPO. What can we do? Being part of this journey, or all of that is the narrative that I have in my mind. But what was your narrative to look for growth, or how did you start Growth Hackers as a community? What's that narrative on your head?
You know, for me, I've just been really passionate about just trying to figure out how growth works. You know, from early on in my career, you know, it's one of those things that, like, the more you learn, the more you realize how complex the whole system is. And so, one of my favorite things was talking with other people that were also trying to figure that out. And it was hard to find other people who were trying to figure that out. And so that's where I figured, that if we could build a community where other people who were passionate about growth and how it works and could, you know, tell stories about different companies that were growing quickly. And so, one of the things that we've done in Growth Hackers is break down, the growth engines of a lot of well-known companies and how they're actually growing, and you know, pick the brains in our AMAs of people who are growing companies today. So like that to me, it's part of that bigger personal mission for me is basically to figure out how growth works and then help as many companies who've got valuable solutions tap into this knowledge that's continuing to evolve over time. And so, Growth Hackers has really become a powerful part of that personal mission for me. But getting it started in the beginning was really hard. We, you know, to build a community, you know, you can't build a community sort of one person at a time. So we had to work for, you know, several months where it was 7 days a week. If somebody posted something, we wanted to engage and interact with it on our team and vote it up. And just, I think probably the biggest advantage I had in growing that is that I already had a decent Twitter following. So I could kind of leverage the user base I had on Twitter. If somebody posted an article, I could share it to my Twitter feed and ask people to comment on the article on Growth Hackers. And so I kind of went back and forth in leveraging that initial, you know, maybe 10,000 Twitter followers I had at the time. I think I'm maybe 150,000 now, but but 10,000 was still a pretty good base for building a community off of. So that's kind of in a nutshell. I don't know if you've got specific questions around that, I'm happy to answer.
I got that. You know, I think it's largely driven by passion there, and I get that story.
Yep.
Cool. Now we have what we call the rapid fire round. You know, quick questions that comes on my mind. In this case, it's stage manager. And, you know, the first answers that you can think of from there.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. What's the one product or the app that, as a growth hacker, you cannot live without?
Amplitude.
Okay. And are you a social bird or a picture junkie?
I'm trying to be neither these days. Social media is such a time suck that I probably spend more time on Instagram these days, but trying to wean myself off of all of it.
Right. Okay. And if you were to assign 5 adjectives to the word growth culture, what would they be?
I'm not even sure if I'm saying objective. So mission driven. I don't know if that's an objective or not. I mean, an adjective or not.
Let's just talk about 5 words that you can think for the word growth culture.
Yeah. Mission driven, analytical, value driven, collaborative, and quantified progress.
Okay. And how would you explain growth to a 5-year-old?
I love this question. I would say, tell me about your favorite toy and why you love that toy, and how we would get a lot of other people to use this toy would be helping them reach that same experience that you've had with the toy. So, you know, you're a little girl. We want to find other little girls like you who could also really have fun with this toy the same way that you have. And to do that, we really need to understand why you love the toy. And if we can tell people about that and get them to use it the same, play with it the same way that you do, they're going to love it too. And we'll get a lot of people using this toy.
Sean, I got to tell you something really. So I have a 2-year-old and no conversation goes like this.
Well, you said 5-year-old, so...
Right. Okay. And
so I have a 19-year-old and a 17-year-old, and interestingly, my 19-year-old is studying business at Berkeley now, and I've had so many conversations like that with her over the years that I think, particularly in her business classes, she's like, "This is so easy," just because she really enjoys it and is fascinated by it. But it's great to be able to see her have that same passion that I had. And I actually went in, and her professor was teaching them about growth hacking pretty recently, and she mentioned that I was her dad, and so I got to go in and lecture in the class about a week ago, which is pretty cool.
That's fantastic. That's great to hear. All right. Okay. Now, Sean, if you wanted to have a coffee conversation with a person who's alive anywhere in the world right now, who would it be and why?
I think it would probably be Mark Zuckerberg, because I just think he has done such a good job. So much of the innovation that's happened around growth has happened under his watch at Facebook. And, you know, and again, you see the things that they're doing at Facebook now being applied to Facebook Marketplace and Messenger and, you know, all of these Instagram and all these other things that are also so kicking butt. And so to really just get, I would just love to geek out about growth with him, because I know I think everything from North Star metric is something that he pushed early on, and he's just so relentless about communicating the mission to everyone at Facebook, and he pushed to allow whether he started the growth team or created an environment where it could start. I think all of these things show that he's just really well wired for growth, and it would be a fascinating conversation with him.
Right. Now, if I have to ask you this kind of question, right? So there's enough information out there. There's a lot of content out there, but there's not a lot of relevant content out there. There's probably just content just everywhere. It's on the TV. It's on our mobile phones. It's as a text. It's as a podcast. It's all of this. And I think content is one way that all of us keep learning about everything, right? And I know I asked you this earlier, where I said, hey, you know what? If you were to learn about growth, where would you look for information? And I remember you said, no, there's no way I'm going to look outside. I'll rather look inside and look at metrics. But of course, we don't have the time to make all the mistakes that we can make. And the best way is to see how people have looked at an approach and what they've done and what metrics that they've looked at or what failures that they've had or what success that they have. And we try to draw parallels there and then try to implement that into our own systems. And that's how I've looked at growth in my career. Now, thinking this into perspective, you know, what are the, I don't know, what books come to your mind? What podcasts come to your mind? Or what blogs come to your mind when you think of something like this, keeping you updated about things in growth?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think from a book perspective, trying to look at what are the parts of growth that don't change over time? So platforms change, markets change, but basic human psychology doesn't really change that much over time. So I think Cialdini's Influence is an awesome book of just understanding how minds are wired. And then it's really everything else. We evolve our learning and how to take advantage of how minds are wired. But then the other piece that I really have enjoyed doing, and it's maybe less reading and more studying on it, but just trying to study how the fastest growing companies are growing. And so that's, you know, I've written some of those growth studies, but anytime I come across any growth study that anyone's written on trying to break down the growth of a business, I find that fascinating, because it's almost any company, if you know how they're growing, you can borrow something from that and apply it to your business and be smarter about growing your business.
That's fantastic. That's great to hear. With that, I think we're kind of done with the podcast.
Thank you for listening to Mind the Gap. Subscribe to our podcast at freshchat.com/mindthegap. You can check out our upcoming episodes and ask questions to our guest by sending an audio message there. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with the world. See you guys soon.